into tonight's program. All right, so we're starting. We got different music tonight. You know, we got the hour screwed up here a little bit. Welcome to Hour 1 of the Molloy Show. Thanks for tuning in. This hour is sponsored by Nancy Flint. Our gal Flint. Now, somebody's going to say that, so I might as well. Anyway, here's her message. Don't let the flying monkey steal your ideas. This longtime listener and podcast subscriber can help you with your trademarks and patents. This is for you folks. Go to our website. It's flintiplaw.com. And when you go there, you'll find her email and phone number. Nancy Flint, she's an attorney, wants to help you. If you have a trademarks you want to get registered or patents you want to get registered, go to her website, flintiplaw.com. When you write out, it looks like Flintipaw, Flintiplaw, flintiplaw.com. That would be our gal Flint. Remember that movie, Our Man Flint? There was a series of them, wasn't there? Hey, it's really taking off now, isn't it? What was the number on Saturday? 700 arrests? It's an old trick that the white-shirted cops use. They stand in front of a crowd of 1,000 people who are chanting and making all kinds of noise. The cop stands way up in front. All right, you'll clear the bridge. If you're not clear of the bridge, you will be arrested. You know, and the only people can hear that are four or five people in the front of this enormous crowd. And they say, oh, okay. And they get off the bridge. Everybody else is then netted. And you know what? These nets, I mean, this is really starting to piss me off. I mean, big time. I look at the coverage. Oh, yeah, it's getting coverage now. And the smartasses have kind of stopped. You know, the smartass reporters and opinion writers who looked at what was going on at Wall Street. Ah, well, they don't have any leaders, and they got one guy in there named Hell, and another one named Footprint or something. I don't know. They're just Jesus. Yeah. And this is what media, this is what they do. You know, find somebody who looks unusual or outrageous, because that's what these kinds of demonstrations are about. They're about making the point. But unlike these brain-dead sons of bitches who continue to steal America blind, I'm talking about the capitalists, the people that demonstrate do have a sense of humor. I'll tell you what, you writers at the Post and the Times and other places, you better hold on to your asses if these big demonstrations ever lose their sense of humor. Yeah. That's when your fear, which you're feeling now, is going to escalate big time. Because once the jugglers go home, and the clowns go home, and the comedians go home, and the people with the funny names that the writers and the television cameras can zero in on, once they are not there, hold on to your ass, because then you will know that the hard times have begun. So, I digress. That just always irritates me. Now they're using these orange nets. Remember when America used to be a free speech zone? Nah, of course you don't. I don't either. I remember when we were told America was a free speech zone. Now these nets, these orange nets, what the cops do, they kind of mislead people. Now these are people who are not doing anything. They're not breaking any laws, except maybe they're breaking a law they didn't have a permit. Ooh, a permit to exercise your First Amendment right. So the cops break out these orange nets. It's very insulting. Maybe demonstrators ought to start carrying some kind of a cutting instrument so that when they're netted up, they can just and not be netted anymore. I don't know. But I see it. I'm starting to think, you know, they think we're tuna. They think we're dolphins. This is not good. These nets. These nets are bad. So, anyway, 7,800 people get arrested. for walking across a bridge now. Oh, well, you're in the roadway. Screw the roadway. We're out for a Saturday stroll. And then in the Times, today, in the New York section, there's an article, White Shirts, quote, quote, of Police Department take on enforcer role. And what they're talking about are the so-called white shirts, the commanding officers atop an army of lesser-ranking officers in dark blue. Now, the white shirts, people who wear the white shirts, they are lieutenants, captains, or inspectors. And normally what they do is kind of stand back and verbally organize the blue shirts to go, all right, see those three people over there? Go arrest them. But the white shirts now are getting into it. All right, so I don't know what's up with that. I have no idea. Maybe they just want to get their hands on one of these goddamn hippie protesters, you think? So I take a look in the New York Times today in the local section, New York section, and there's a photograph of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people standing there. 5 of them are uniform officers. 3 of the uniform officers are white shirts, and every one of them is about 80 pounds overweight. What is up with this? What's with you cops? You're cops! You look like a bunch of slobs. You really do, with your guts hanging over your belt. What kind of physical shape are you in? Look at you. Look at you. Go to nytimes.com and see if you can find this picture. There they are, you know. Just blubber-ass looking 50-something men. If you're going to be a cop, why don't you get in shape? Why don't you show a little respect for the office of being a police officer in New York, huh? You big-bellied freaks. I can't believe this. Now, am I being very juvenile right now? You damn right I am. I mean, this is disgusting. And no, I'm not, on the other hand. How long before you think these three, if you're looking at the picture, have to retire on medical disability retirement plan, that then all of a sudden the people who are doing the protesting in New York will have to pay for? That's the way it works. That's the way it works. Big-bellied thugs, I swear to God. Ugh, can't look at it. Get in shape. I mean, if you're going to arrest people, if you're going to wear a uniform, if you're going to look tough, you know, get rid of the overhang. At least get rid of the overhang. Boo. Boo. Jesus. Boo. Boo. Every time I see a group, you got to see the cops down here in city cops down here in Atlanta. OMFG. Now, the SWAT cops and the special weapons and tactics cops, you know, the ones that walk around and look like they're on patrol in the jungle someplace or on a combat zone on the Western Front or the Eastern Front. That's even worse, right? They're in good shape. But the average city cop in Atlanta, boom, boom. Just that great, big, gross-looking. I mean, you ever watch cops on television where they pull somebody over and then this big chase begins, right? Isn't that fun? You like cops? I like cops, too. I love to watch cops sometimes, and I'm just all depressed. And I think, okay. But how are these big belly boom types ever going to run them down?
Well, to be fair, Mike, everyone in Atlanta looks like that now, virtually. And this is the home of Krispy Kreme.
That's true. Krispy Kreme. Krispy Kreme. Boom. We'll be right back.
It's Mike Malone.
About 22 past the hour. If you want to check in, phone number here is 877-996-2556, especially about the resistance that is finally, it appears to be taking shape in this country now. From around the country, this is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Local offshoots of the Occupy Wall Street demonstration that has taken over a park in New York's financial district are being organized in Wisconsin. Taken over a park. Oh, really, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel? Is that, it's taken over a park. Isn't that just so, trivializing? A movement that's going to devour your ass, right? Oh, it's taken over a park. Participants, who is this? Sharif Durhams of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Listen to the sentence. Participants have rallied near Wall Street for 3 weeks. No, not really. Against what they perceive as corporate greed and economic inequality. A flashpoint sparked over the weekend when about 700 participants were arrested as they marched in vehicle travel lanes of the Brooklyn Bridge. Doon, 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 doon. Organizers of the Milwaukee event travel lane, vehicle travel lanes. That's cool. Let me write that down. Vehicle travel lanes. Damn, I never heard a street referred to that way. Vehicle travel lanes. That's great, Sharif. Organizers in Milwaukee, Madison, and Appleton are planning rallies October 15th, part of the International Day of Action, in support of the protests. Those in Madison plan a rally, quote, on or around, October 15th at the State Capitol Square. That really pisses Sharif off because, you know, on or around, what does that mean? I don't know what they mean. Somebody tell me, what do they mean? You'll find out soon enough. What else? The Occupy Milwaukee Facebook page, created a week ago, had nearly 2,000 followers Monday afternoon, while Madison's page had more than 2,200 followers. Chase Bank spokeswoman Christine Holeva said the bank was unaware of the rally being planned for downtown Milwaukee, but, she said,
it's on a Saturday. Well, the branch at Water in Wisconsin isn't open on Saturday.
Okay, I added that last part. Now, I realize I'm sounding a little bit like a juvenile tonight, but I guess it's just in keeping with the attitude of the authorities who are taking a look and haven't taken a look at this protest as it was centered in New York. Which is where it began. And it began very organically. And it's like, the big-bellied cops and the authorities, they can't target the leadership. The media can't target the leadership. Because, in fact, there really is not leadership at the Occupy Wall Street. It is a movement. And if leaders are needed, leaders will emerge, but, maybe not. So how does the establishment treat the demonstration? Like a bunch of kids on a playground. Like the writer in the Milwaukee Journal said, they took over a park in New York's financial district and they won't come off the slides and the swings. That's kind of the implication, right? Mr. Durhams of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, there's no leadership. Have you noticed that? The reporting that way. Everybody, all the established reporters and TV anchor people, they're just so nonplussed. Well, we don't know who to talk to. Oh, really? What's the matter, dummies? You can't take a look at a situation and report on it and say, uh-oh. This might be it, the beginning of the end of this filthy, exploitative capitalism? No, they can't say that. Of course not. That would require them to, say something that their owners not the owners of the paper, the owners of the people, the writers, the anchor people, the reporters, might not like. So what do they say? Well, there's no leadership. They don't have any objective. What are you going to do? How many times have you seen that? What do you want? What's your goal? I learned to be goal-oriented. What are you people doing here? No goal? Who are you trying to overthrow? What do you want? What's up? What's down? You'll find out soon enough. Before the hour. Oh, yeah, this hour is sponsored by Nancy Flint, and here's her message. Don't let the flying monkeys steal your ideas. This longtime listener and podcast subscriber can help you with your trademarks and patents. Go to flintiplaw.com for my email and phone number. Nancy is an attorney, and I went to her website. She will help you with the kind of stuff that, protects your intellectual property. So if you are looking for someone for that, go to Nancy Flint. Her email address, again, flintiplaw.com, and you'll find her email and phone number. Thank you, Nancy. All right, so that's what's coming to Wisconsin. Los Angeles over the weekend, and now this, I gotta share this with you. This comes from the Xinhua news agency in China. Some 800 protesters, of course there's more than that, marched and rallied in downtown Los Angeles Sunday to show their support for Occupy Wall Street protesters in New York City. Xinhua news agency. Wow. Approximately 500 protesters set up camp in front of Los Angeles City Hall. About 300 more marched through the streets of downtown L.A. with variations on the slogan, "We are the 99%, and all week, all day, occupied L.A. Many protesters carried placards, some reading, "We are the 99%, this is our country, we will occupy it," or "Banks got bailed out, we got sold out." A protester told Xinhua, protester who declined to give his name, quote, "The sign, 'We are the 99%, means everyone, that is, except the richest 1% of the population, who the demonstrators contend are the only beneficiaries of America's economic policies," end quote. This unnamed protester also, if he really existed, also told Xinhua, quote, "Our goal is to keep it peaceful. We are nonviolent. America needs a change, and we need jobs," end quote. And then the article finishes by saying the protesters organized by a group called Occupy Los Angeles. See, even, well, you can't blame, the Chinese for getting it wrong. A group called Occupy Los Angeles? Really? "Mostly young, are angry over Wall Street greed, corporate influence in politics, and the richest 1% of America gaining more wealth during a period of time while the majority faces unemployment, growing poverty rates, and austerity measures." And then this is the important line. "Most of the demonstrators said they had heard about the Occupy Los Angeles protests via Twitter and the Internet." Indeed. Michigan. This is from the Detroit News. "The two-week protest on Wall Street is spreading through the Internet and social media. with similar demonstrations being planned nationwide, including in Lansing and Detroit this month. A demonstrator, Chris LeMaire, who is a 54-year-old Michigan retiree and former state employee, said, quote, "I'm afraid of getting arrested like those people in New York, but I will be going to the gathering at the Capitol." That would be Lansing. "I read about it on Facebook, and it's like people are waking up. We need to send a message. We need our government to be fair," end quote. And then this line again, "Protesters lack a clear objective. Though they speak against corporate greed, social inequality, global climate change, and other concerns, that's not a clear objective? Jesus Christ, what do you want? But, Doug Guthrie, writing for the Detroit News, says, but they are getting more organized and showing no sign of quitting. And then this, "Despite the lack of leadership and disparate information, the movement is gaining attention," said one local political observer. Bill Ballinger, editor of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter, said, quote, "Whatever it is off to an impressive start," end quote. What else here? Boston. Police have arrested two dozen protesters for trespassing during a demonstration against Bank of America's foreclosure practices at the banking giant's offices in downtown Boston. I mean, isn't that's you see how this works, right? Bank of America, that has been gouging the entire population of America, throwing people in the street, throwing people out of work, whose policies, money manipulation policies, are costing people their lives. And people protest that, and the protesters get arrested. Son of a bitch. You notice that? Sure. Well, of course you do. The Boston Herald reports that the event was an act of civil disobedience, and that the organizers intended to send the message that the lenders' practices, Bank of America's practices, were unfair. Boston Police Commissioner Edward Davis told the Boston Globe, "They wanted to be arrested and we obliged." Oh. Really? Well, how nice of you. Bank of America spokesman T.J. Crawford dismissed the demonstration as a publicity stunt. You slimy son of a bitch. Really? A publicity stunt? For whom? For what? Let the tumbrils roll. Let's bring out guillotines just for demonstration purposes, you know? Then just get a great bigger one of those enormous bolognese out of a deli someplace. You know, one of those great big round ones. And stick it in the little neck loop cut in the guillotine, and then yank the cord. And then ask Mr. T.J. Crawford, a Bank of America spokesman, if he gets the message in that publicity stunt. Organizers say about 3,000 people joined the protest. Now, nobody at the protest mentioned the fact, at least not to our intrepid reporter for the Boston Herald, that Bank of America planned these debit card fees. They want to steal, these filthy son of a bitches want to steal and will steal as much as they can. They don't care who they steal from. They don't care the economic situation that Americans now find themselves in. Debit cards. You get your food stamp allotment dumped on your debit card. Oh, do you really? Okay, we're going to take a fee of $5 a month off your debit card because we're a bank and because we can. So, Mr. T.J. Crawford, you think it's a publicity stunt? Okay. Keep thinking that, pal. The attitude of the people in the capitalist world, in the corporate world, and the attitude of the people in corporate media toward folks who are finally saying, okay, this is it. You pushed us too far. You took everything we had. You took our chance to get an education. You took our chance for sensible health care. You took our homes. You took our jobs, our factories. You turned great chunks of the United States into a goddamn desert. Literally and figuratively, with your genetic food processing. And the jobs gone. And you took our future. And you think this is a publicity stunt? Well, in a manner of speaking, it is. The more publicity, the better. And if some clown like this spokes geek for Bank of America in Boston wants to call a publicity stunt, what's that noise I hear? The tumbril's turning. No? God. It's the attitude of the power structure. Across the board, the attitude of the power structure.
They've taken over a park, a little park down there in Lower Manhattan. That's what they, isn't that cute? They took over a park. All, I don't know, 300 of them. Ooh, and now what? You took over a park.
Jesus, God. Okay. That's probably what Hosni Mubarak said when somebody came to him and said,
"Your Highness, sir, we have people gathering in Tahrir Square, and I don't think they're there for Friday prayers, if you know what I mean."
Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Nancy Flint. And here's her message. It's for you. Don't let the flying monkeys steal your ideas. This longtime listener and podcast subscriber can help you with your trademarks and patents. Go to Flint IP Law. FlintIPLaw.com for Nancy's email and phone number. She is a intellectual property attorney. Very, very necessary in these weird times. Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for the sponsorship and the podcast subscription, and most of all, just for tuning in. Bless your heart. Sanchez is in East L.A. How'd it go with the demonstrations out there on Sunday?
Man, oh man, oh man, they're still going on right now.
Oh, good.
From the depth of the ghetto, I wish you a good evening, senor. Can I tell you something first? Because I have it up here on my screen. It's very relevant to the conversation you were just having about orange netting.
Yeah.
You know that J.P. Morgan Chase recently donated $4.6 million to the NYPD Police Foundation. You know, that could buy a lot.
A lot of orange netting. What happened? Where'd you go, Sanchez? He cut himself off. All right, Sanchez, just call back in. Is that him? See if that's him. He got very excited about, I guess, about what he was talking about. Is that Sanchez? No? All right, Sanchez, now you're going to have trouble getting through because the lines are filling up. Just keep trying, pal. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, guys?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. I want to try to complete my thought before you respond.
Okay.
The ultra-rich in this country have been...
All right, now what happened to him? Is there something wrong with our phone system? All right, Chuck, call back in. I'm sorry, I'm not sure. That's two in a row. Let's see what's going on. Let me try Bill in Atlanta. Let's see if you can stay on here, Bill.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, Mike, I used to come to demonstrations and conferences in Atlanta where you were.
Oh, yeah?
And I used to shop where Kathy shopped.
Yeah, where's that?
Let's see, Last Chance Thrift Store.
I'll be damned, really?
Yeah.
that's our favorite shopping, our favorite shopping place. No, I'm serious.
I didn't want to say, but you.
Huh?
Yeah, listen.
Yeah.
It's all about plunder.
Plunder.
We have to remember that everything Hitler did was legal.
Right, that's true. That's true.
You have let's see, your broadcast on just after the election, November of 2004.
Uh-huh.
There's a YouTube recording of that.
Yeah.
Where you talk about the voting machine company.
Mm-hmm.
I keep putting the link to that up on all the Occupy Wall Street board.
Well, chat. Thank you very much.
I wouldn't have known you were still around unless I saw you. Somebody mentioned, say, call in Mike Malloy. On one of those chats.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm beginning to think this program is indestructible. It's been through so many hands, so many ownerships, so many stations, so many networks, until finally we wised up and we put together our own network, and nobody can fire us now. The stations that carry the program can drop us anytime they want to, but nobody can fire us. And if that happens, if every single station and XM and Sirius all at the same time said, to hell with Malloy, we'd keep broadcasting because we would be, do internet radio, and we would wind up, I don't know, we would be carried by the Russian.
some
Russian satellite would pick us up.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
Well, they might. You know?
They just might.
That's my regular television watching. That's where I get my news.
Yeah, that's a good
place. Russia Today.
It's a good place to get it if you're not. I mean, you know, you can't go for everything you see on Russian television because it's still, you know, it is still Russia, you know. No offense to the Russians, but, you know, what is.
Another bourgeois country.
That's right. Oh, my goodness.
I know you need to get on to other things, but I wanted to ask you,
mm-hmm.
you know, do you still hold what you said about it was three voting machine companies.
Yeah.
Now, right now, Diebold has been taken over by SAS, and Georgia, at least in Georgia, I don't know why I think, somebody told me, Diebold and that whole conglomerate is now called Dominion.
Dominion.
Which was their name all along, Dominion Theology, Reconstructionist.
Well, that's right. Diebold is owned by those Christian maniacs.
Reconstructionists.
Yeah, that's right.
That's who they are.
Oh, my God.
But the question I wanted to ask you, do you think Obama got elected by the voting machines? And I'll get off.
No. I think there was enough. See, those voting machines work. Manipulating them. If an election is close. If it is not close, I think Obama. All right, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you should go listen to your broadcast. It's on YouTube.
All right,
that's not what you were saying then.
I probably should.
It's probably like this. It's probably like the moon landing couldn't be a hoax because the guy that Van Allen, you know, who
the radiation belt,
the theory of the Van Allen belt,
right,
said that he must have been wrong because the moon landings really happened.
Yeah,
his physics was wrong because the moon landing had to happen. You get that?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know
anymore.
Isn't
that what the Democrats said?
I guess.
You know, after they won the Senate?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Who
okay,
knows? I don't know anything anymore. Not that I ever did, but it's getting harder and harder. All right, Bill, I'll see you at Last Chance Thrift Store, all right?
Yeah, right.
All right, man. Take care. We got to get out of here. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Michael Beloy. Second here, see Sanchez is back. Stick around. We are talking about the occupation that is spreading around the country from that little old park in lower Manhattan to all over the damn place. From Kate in the desert, who's not in the desert now. She's doing her thing. Now she's hauling veterans to get their health care. She volunteered for an organization in Montana. This woman gets around, I swear to God. She writes, I happen to hear a few minutes of our morning right-wing pap in Montana. Someone from Billings called in scared. He read that marchers were gathering somewhere in Montana. He wasn't sure what they were doing, but he went to a website where he saw a red fist. He's convinced that they are communist Marxist socialists that are about to take our freedoms. Poor bastard. Kate adds, I can't gather nor march, but I have a captive audience in my van. They have spent the morning in various waiting rooms at the VA watching Fox and are still ranting when they climb aboard. I use those opportunities to make snarky, ironic remarks, informing them gently how misinformed they are. I practice insurgency wherever I can. She does, too. I met Kate. All right, so Kate in Montana is working the crowd, only doing a little bit different from the folks in lower Manhattan. She's out there winning souls one at a time. Amen. And from Prairie 2 about the orange net. The orange netting the NYPD is using is what we in the North call snow fence. Yeah, you know, we have that down here too, Bruce. But we in the North. All right. No, it's okay. It's okay. He doesn't know. He says, well, we in the North call snow fence not that easy to cut and would probably result in gunfire if you pulled a box cutter on a net held by the cops. The physics about it is that the cops don't have any way to hold it up, if people would start hanging on it, it would collapse pretty easily. If you don't let the cops make it into a circle and close the circle, sort of throw your body on the gears philosophy, but you can't hesitate. You can't let them close the circle. Then it has more strength. Okay.
It's what we in the North call snow fence. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Down here, this is called a pickup truck.
Oh, well. His heart's in the right place. All right, Sanchez is back. What'd you do? Cut yourself off, right?
Getting intermittent cutting off on the audio here, so I hope I have a good connection. I'm on the landline right now, senor.
Okay, let her rip.
Currently right now, the United Teachers Association and Occupy LA started a march at the Miguel Contreras School at, 4 o'clock this afternoon. And currently, they're at the Chase Manhattan Bank, downtown Los Angeles. There's about 500 teachers, along with the California Nurses Association, who have joined Occupy LA.
There's wow.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How is KABC or KNBC or KCBS handling, covering this?
I'm not able to report on that since I've been on radio exclusively today. They were there yesterday, Sunday morning. KABC gave us coverage. The KTLA Channel 5 trucks were there. Channel 4, I don't know about. I'm sorry, senor. KCBS, the local CBS outlet, was also there. We got a fair shake. By the way, if I can give a shout-out to radio station KPCC, the Pasadena City College NPR outlet, because they were spot on. They did their homework like real journalists do and gave us accurate reports and numbers yesterday morning, Sunday morning. So a special shout out to them. Senor, I got to tell you, because you know I was there at the first meeting.
Right.
There were only 60 of us. And me and my friend Arturo from the Whittier Area Peace and Justice Coalition, we were the oldest people there. You know I'm 54 years old. These are young, dynamic individuals, okay? These people, okay, they may not be on the same part of the freeway that we're on because we're further down the road. Man, we've been around here longer, but they know what's up, man. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I'm supporting these people. I'm supporting the people in New York, man. I mean, mm-hmm. It's here, man. So some people may not be ready for this. You know why? Because this generation below us, they've been raised with this soundbite culture. They expect reality TV to be perfectly edited and presented to them. No, senor, this is, if you've been watching the live stream, this is what democracy used to look like. I mean, right. Do you think the Declaration of Independence was written in 20 minutes?
No, I don't think so. No, Sanchez.
Well, see, come on. Give the people, I mean, again, they're young people, right. And this is an organic organization. I can tell you from my own experience, senor, that we are 99%. We are the majority. We are being non-violent, okay?
Right.
But this is the intentions from these people, and it is a genuine spirit. It is a genuine and a real energy, senor, and you know what I'm talking about.
Sure. This is what is driving mainstream media insane, because they can't, and the right wingers. This is not like, somebody made a comparison. Well, this is like the teabag movement. No, it's not. This is entirely different. The teabag movement were a bunch of goddamn reactionaries who just decided they didn't like having a colored president. So they organized themselves into these little cells of hate mongers. What is going on, with the Occupy Wherever attitude and action are people who have had enough of the entire system? What this really is, and you know this, Sanchez, as well as I do, this is a reaction, and a good one and a healthy one, to capitalism. I think a lot of people are realizing capitalism, at least the predatory type in this country, has run out its string, and it's time to be replaced.
Well, senor, you more than I have, but you have been asking, what's it going to take to get the people out into the streets? You have your answer, senor. It's a good one. It feels really, really good.
Yeah, I just hope it continues.
It will. It will. These people are determined. And as soon as I get off the phone with you and post this clip, I'm going back downtown. I'm in East L.A. right now. I'm just here to monitor the radio waves and to make my phone calls, and I did. Senor, por favor, can I thank some of the other programs that allowed me to talk?
Sure, right.
Randy Rhodes, I would like to thank the Randy Rhodes station. I would like to thank the Norman Goldman station for letting me get on the airwaves and pass the word. They are full on board. Norman Goldman actually donated a carton of socks to the people at Occupy Wall Street, and they opened it on the live stream, and they saw it. So
A carton of what?
A carton of socks. You know, the people in New York. Yeah, because here's what happens.
Oh, yeah,
getting
sure. No, I understand. No, I'm right there with you, Sanchez. I just didn't understand what you were saying, a carton of socks. No, that's what they were asking for, among other things.
Donations, because they got trenched, but they've been wearing the same socks for, like, weeks. Ooh. I mean, I can imagine what it smells like, but no. Right. Anyway, and one last thing, because this is posted on the Occupy Wall Street website, that J.P. Morgan Chase recently donated $4.6 million to the New York City Police Foundation. And that buys a lot of that snow netting
sure
that they
does.
Talk about up north.
It sure does. All right,
yeah.
Sanchez, let us know what's happening. Now, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Brad Friedman will be hosting this program, because I'll be in D.C. at what is turning into the Occupy Washington branch of this, although it's different. It's the October2011.org movement, but it's the same thing.
Yes.
The same
yes.
energy.
Yes. You're going to put the tip. That's the tip of the needle. I mean, you're going to accurately portray everything, because I've seen it. You're organized, man. So I wish you luck. I send you love from Los Angeles, man.
All right, Sanchez. Take care. Stay in touch and keep your head down. We'll be right back. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I'll be here tomorrow night. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Brad Friedman will be filling in from our affiliate in Los Angeles. And I will be in D.C. I think the plan is on both Wednesday night and Thursday night, I will be calling in to Brad with an update of what's going on. I don't expect anything to have occurred by Wednesday night, although you never know. The event in D.C. starts on Thursday. It is obviously more organized than the organic movement that developed in Lower Manhattan, but there it goes without saying that it is the same energy driving that one that's driving this one, that's driving the other one, that's driving this one over there and that one out there. And perhaps the time has finally come. We'll know soon, won't we? Oh, and let me just drop this in before we go on. David just mentioned about Amanda Knox, the American young woman who was found not guilty by the Italian appeals court today, a complete reversal of her conviction 2+ years ago for murder. And as David points out, it's a good thing she was on trial in Italy instead of Texas or Georgia, because had it been Texas or Georgia, she would already have had a needle stuck in her arm. They execute the innocent or those on sketchy evidence in this country. Yeah, I had that thought too today, David. She would have been dead in several American states. All right, Chuck found a good phone in Knoxville, Tennessee. All right, Chuck.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
whatever it's worth, I'm ready for some Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah, I know. That just, boy, does that date you, pal.
The ultra rich.
Wait a second. Are you talking about the music or the rifle?
No, I'm talking about the music.
Talking about the music. All right, I just want to clear that up. All right.
Yeah, for what it's worth, the classic song, man.
Right.
Cover song.
I got you.
Anyway, I wanted to say the ultra-rich have been planning to take over this country for a long time. They're highly organized. They have a lot of money. They control the media. They've even got their own political wing now. And they're going to try to steer this thing off course by hook or crook any way they can.
Right.
The smartest thing to me that can happen with this movement is for them to stay undefined and ride strictly on the energy because it's the one thing that the ultra-rich could not control.
That's right. Absolutely right.
And as long as they don't frame themselves, they're not limiting themselves as to what all they're covering. And I hope that they cover it all, not just the financial. They cover the socio-political spectrum. Justice, all of it.
I think that is the objective, and I think that there is a willful ignorance on the part of the reporters, the media people, who keep asking the protesters, "What is it you want?" Because the protesters keep answering them and answering them clearly, except for the fact that the people asking the questions have impacted sawdust between their ears, and they don't hear what these protesters are saying.
No, I don't think that's it. I think what it is that they are trying to redirect the energy away from where it needs to be. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get these people to specify specific items when there are literally thousands of items these people are talking about.
Well, that could
be. And by doing that, once they limit themselves to those items, then these people who want to redirect this energy can put labels on them and stereotype them and ridicule them and disperse the energy.
Well, you're absolutely right, except for one thing. I would take issue with this. Do you really think that some of these reporters that are out there asking people why they're doing this, do you think they are that slick?
No, I don't think it's the reporters that are that slick. I think it's their bosses that are that slick. Those reporters are being controlled by people like Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
And they are telling them to do this. They are putting pressure on them to get these people to define themselves.
Yeah.
And that's how they're going to destroy them.
Well, that's a good point. That is a good point. I hadn't thought it through.
As long as they keep themselves amorphous and undefined, they can't be attacked.
That's a good idea.
And it is growing in leaps and bounds. And once it reaches a critical mass, you are looking at a full-blown revolution.
I do not disagree with what you're saying. All right, Chuck, I got a break here. Thank you, pal.
You bet.
And thanks for calling back in. That can be maddening when you lose your connection. All right, we have a break here, right, Kathy? All right, we'll come back after the break. We have a couple open lines. If you want to get something said tonight, the number here is 877-996-2556.
Me, I'm too busy dodging through the facts. Here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. And the lies will come down and the promises bust. Losing candy machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give what the society wants. I'm going underground, going underground. Pulling the fast pass, bring up the stock to pound. Going underground, going underground. So let the boys all sing. The birds are shouting, going underground.
25 before the hour. Before I go back to your calls here, I've got to get this in from Prairie 2. The headline tonight, somebody will own the world. The Senate has taken up debate on a bill aimed at forcing China to revalue its currency or face higher tariffs. Let me digress. I mean, I'm totally ignorant about international economics. That's one of the reasons Prairie 2 contributes so in such a valuable way to this program. Having said that, isn't this what we've been talking about, Bruce, for months, if not years, on this program? Higher tariffs. I digress. Back to Prairie 2. While the bill doesn't name China, China is the only country that qualifies as a currency manipulator. Beijing spends as much as $200 billion a year to keep its currency pegged at about 40% cheaper than it should be. It seems counterintuitive to spend money to make your own currency cheap. It makes everything exported from China cheap. You would think that would mean less money for China. But more importantly, it makes everything coming into China very expensive, and that makes all the sense in the world. See how that works? The thing about economics is the only thing that matters is the total at the end of the equation. And the end of the equation for China is a world that they own. If China actually needs something, like airliners, for example, then their government will provide some sort of subsidy. And if it's something they want to make themselves, like Buicks, they don't provide the subsidy, and Chinese Buicks happen as if by magic. It's a way to have tariffs while pretending you have free trade. Everybody in the world does this in one way or another, except the United States. We don't do it because we are a conquered people who are having their country strip mined of its wealth. We weren't conquered by China, of course, at least not yet. We were conquered by a relatively small handful of rich people. It's doubtful that the people behind this policy realized just how well China would make this deal with the devil work for them. It has also worked fabulously well for the rich people here, as wealth drains away from the 99% and into their pockets, even if China takes a huge cut in the process. And as China hones in on world domination and a race with the 1% here, who also plan to dominate the world. The concept of a rigged system is nothing new, of course. General Smedley Butler wrote a book about the practice titled War is a Racket 100 years ago. Almost. China is just the first country to play the game with our capitalists and make it work for them. Normally, the third world player gets taken down in the process. The same names like Prescott and Bush have been trying for world domination and to do away with democracy in the U.S. for over a century. Some names like Koch and Walton are more recent, but just as deadly. In reality, there have been people like them up to this sort of thing all the way back to the founding of the country. Different presidents and political movements have pushed back periodically, and the New Deal nearly made democracy permanent. But sadly, the people have forgotten. In the past 40 years, the rich have skillfully used the media to make themselves seem like super patriots and wise men who can do no wrong, and that they're here to protect us. The exact opposite is true, of course. Even the teabaggers realize something is wrong, but they are so easily distracted. The new 99% movement has a chance of bringing back democracy, but the 1% will stop at nothing to destroy them. The pretense that Occupy Wall Street has no leaders makes it difficult to target them, but that will only go so far. A class war is like any other war. There are no rules for the winner. Doon, 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 doon. It's all starting to sound so ominous on the one hand and just giggly on the other, you know? I mean, the Occupy LA, they had jugglers and dancers and artists and skateboarders and... But isn't that, I mean, really, Isn't that what life is supposed to be about? Having fun? I mean, we're here for such, we are conscious. I shouldn't say we're here. We've always been here. Always will be, you know, matter nor energy, that thing. But the reality of consciousness is so brief. And why aren't we playing? Why aren't we, having fun? Why aren't we doing fun things? Now, I understand that, we also have tragedies and we have illness and we have bad things happen. But has life got to be so grim? Has it got to be just a perpetual struggle? Has it got to be something that has no dancers, no poets, no jugglers? And today we find out that Hank Williams Jr. compared President Obama to Hitler. Hank Williams Jr., the voice of Monday Night Football, right? Jesus, God. I don't mean to get all ad hominem on you, but Hank Williams Jr. is just an ugly son of a bitch. I guess it's from all those years of doing whatever drugs he's been doing or alcohol or whatever, but he's just one ugly dog, isn't he? Para is in Bolinas, California. Hello, Para.
Hey, Mike. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, glad you made it. Yeah, go. Sorry about that. What?
I turned off my speaker. Sorry about that.
No problem.
What I wanted to talk to you about today is those orange rolls that the cops are using. I find it really offensive and demeaning, too. But I've been trying to picture what could be done to combat it, and my first thought was box cutters too, but then I also thought, yeah, pull out a weapon, not a good idea, right. How about if everybody stopped, dropped, and rolled all at the same time, because they don't go down to the floor, to the ground. There's like about 2 feet on the bottom, and if everybody that was being penned just dropped to the ground at the same time, the cops would have not, they'd be totally confused. They would be no good. There wouldn't be anybody there to corral.
That's a good idea.
Thanks. I thought so.
Yeah.
I mean, some people, you know, you could kind of roll out underneath, and some people would get caught, might even get clubbed, but a lot of people would probably be able to get away.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And one other thing, yeah. I wanted to say, I saw a great sign today. They only call it class warfare when we fight back.
Right. That's a good one. That's a good one.
And also, sorry, I got a lot on my mind. The mission statement. Okay, the Occupy Wall Street people do not have a list of demands, mm-hmm. but I did unearth a mission statement, which is pretty short. The one thing we all have in common is that we are the 99% who will no longer tolerate the greed and corruption of the 1%.
That works for me.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Para. Don't be a stranger. Call in again. I enjoyed hearing from you. Thank you. From Michael in Roswell, naming the protesters or naming what they're about is an essential part of the identity politics, which furthers a divide and conquer strategy. Still, it's quite funny that they're picking on hippies. Okay, it's a hearkening back to the violent 60s for political effect. They're picking on hippies first because the hippie is dead, buried in 1968. And second, because the hippies were fairly forward-looking and understood the planned obsolescence, rampant consumerism, and even more concentrated corporate control of the economy was destined to produce the endless wars and economic disasters that have become fixtures of American life for the last two decades. When the counterculture rejected those corporate ambitions, it got the patriots, who chose to equate patriotism with conformity, mightily agitated. So, as true today as then, authoritarians never change. They may have new targets for opprobrium from time to time, but ultimately, they're just as annoyed now as they were when about as they were then, about any deviation from conformity of thought. In their liturgy, the greatest mortal sin is to pull back the curtain and expose the wizard twisting the knobs and pulling the levers that animate the hulking leviathan that is U.S. capitalism's self-aggrandizement and self-importance. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. We'll be back in a minute.
On my station, I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Steven is in Burbank, California. Hey, Steven.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Well, I was there Saturday, City Hall.
Yeah?
And, I was there to observe and to maybe offer some advice. And from the signs I saw, they don't need to hear nothing from me. I mean, what Chuck was right about the how the media is going to try to split it up in ideological terms. You know, against the old-fashioned divide and conquer.
Right.
But I went back Sunday. To bring Sanchez his tequila, but he wasn't there. He just left a couple hours earlier. And so I met one of the original 60 that Sanchez was talking about.
Right.
And he came up to me when I was mistaken for somebody that was associated with the Grateful Dead. You know, go figure that one out. And we got into conversation.
One of the musicians,
yeah, Grateful Dead, the musicians.
Oh, really? No, I mean you were mistaken for one of the
somebody associated with them.
Oh, I see.
Not one of the musicians per se, but one of the others.
I gotcha.
And so we got into the conversation, and then another man. Well, I can name their names, but not their last names. One is Jeff, and the other guy's Ryan.
Yeah.
Ryan is undergraduate. Undergraduate, ready to get his bachelor's. He's going to go on for master's in political science, and he's going on for PhD in sociology.
Oh,
and
right.
He's 26 years old. And then Jeff comes up, you know, and he's like 54 years old. So there's mix and match. And we sat there and we had a seminar. Are you kidding me? We had a seminar. You talk about the exchange of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And the hope is in Ryan. The hope is in another man that I met Saturday. Just
Steven! What happened that time, Kathy? Steven just disappeared. All right, damn it. This is, is anything wrong with the equipment? Not a thing. All right, Stephen, if you're still talking, we cannot hear you. Stephen? No, we can't. So call back in. It's probably that piece of human crap, Andrew Breitbart, is screwing with our program, right? Bob is in Mansfield, Ohio. Hello, Bob. No? All right, Kathy, have any idea what's happening here? Did you hit a button up there, perhaps? No? Okay. No? All right. Well, I'm sorry. Bob in Mansfield, Ohio, along with a couple other people tonight. I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on with the phone system, but it's just typical Malloy show. You know, this happens every once in a while. We will get gremlins in the system, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it because they're right wing gremlins. There's just nothing, you know, nothing we can do about it. So we just deal with it, and we lose a lot of callers that way. Not listeners. Listeners love it. To listeners, it's a hoot. Maybe did something click? Are we getting hacked? Somebody getting weird with us? I'll have to get out my 30-06 if that happens. You know, I've come to realize that is the weapons that I have are just kind of quaint. You know, a 30-30, 12-gauge. Couple of handguns. It's just kind of, you know, kind of quaint. You know, I tell sometimes, you know, I live in Georgia, so okay. And sometimes, you know, when I have to do this occasionally. Well, what kind of weapon you got at home, or Mike? I have a 30-30 rifle. A what? A 30-30. You have a 30 caliber rifle? Yeah. Well, what for? because I don't know. I don't know. What do you got? Oh, goddamn, I got me an AR-57 or seven. Man, let me tell you something. Yeah, go ahead, pal. I got me a weapon. All I have to do, I don't even move my finger. I just hold that sucker down. I can whip all 30 rounds in about 18 seconds. Really? Well, I have a 30-30. I don't know why I'm laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing, but that's the way it is here. I mean, you know, I don't know what to tell you. That's just the way it is here. You got a 30 caliber rifle. Damn. Well, I have a friend who I never met, but a guy out in the West, and he's promised me a truck-mounted 50 caliber machine gun when the lines are finally drawn. Wow. Can you imagine that? Boom, 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 boom. I've heard those things before. I've never fired one, but I've heard them. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. Just crazy talk. I'm just doing crazy talk. That's all. Ain't no big deal here. I'm just doing crazy talk. All right, when we come back after this break, just a little bit more on the Trans-Canada pipeline, the, what is it, the XL, Keystone XL, the... you know, that thing that 1,200 people went to jail for earlier in the fall or late summer. Actually, it was in the summer. And there is some interesting news about Hillary Clinton and her former, one of her former top officials in the 2008 presidential campaign. And, well, just stick around. Stick around, all right? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. The Malloy Show is what you're listening to, whether you like it or not. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we were, I just want to cover this. I realized that, this is not the more important stories that broke today, but, we were talking about the Middle Eastern country of Bahrain, off the coast of Saudi Arabia, and how the protesters there were trying to establish their legitimacy. Bahrain is it's a kingdom. It was, according to what I found, it was declared a kingdom in 2002. Prior to that, it was an emirate. I guess one of the royal families from the Saudi Peninsula ran it. Now it's a kingdom. No, I don't know the difference either. But we were talking about the Bahrainis who were demanding a measure of freedom, more of the Arab Spring, so-called. And how the government of Bahrain responded, and they responded brutally. As a matter of fact, wasn't it the Saudis that helped suppress, I hope I'm getting this right, suppress the attempt to establish some sort of political freedom for the people in that country, kind of like what's going on here. the American fall, the Arab Spring, has a ring, doesn't it? Has kind of a... Anyway, some of the people arrested after that uprising was smashed. Some of the people arrested were doctors and medics who were treating people injured and wounded, some of them critically. Some died. But doctors and medics who I would assume that doctors around the world subscribe to, at least formally or informally, the Hippocratic Oath that says first do no harm and describes the code of ethics that physicians are supposed to follow. Well, the doctors and medical personnel in Bahrain were following that particular demand, I guess the way to put it, of doctors. First do no harm. To attempt, no matter what the political aspect of a situation, attempt to fix, heal, if not, well, maybe not heal, but fix, administer, come on, Mike, minister to the people who are wounded, especially when it is in a situation where people are being beat and shot senseless by government thugs. So the doctors in Bahrain did that, and when the uprising was over, a number of them were arrested. We talked about this, and the outrage that this this drew in the medical community and the human rights community around the globe. I mean, how dare you, anybody, arrest doctors who were simply doing what they had done the day before the uprising. They were treating people who were grievously hurt, wounded, car wrecks, gunshots, whatever, in Bahrain. A day after, or the day of, they're doing the same thing. But the kingdom of Bahrain sees the day after as somehow subversive. So, doctors were arrested. And they were put on trial. You'll excuse me if I snicker at the term trial where it concerns these people. Well, a security court in Bahrain has now sentenced 20 doctors and medics to long jail sentences for treating wounded demonstrators during that unrest earlier this year. The court, the order of the court is to sentence these people to jail time ranging from 5 years to 15 years in prison. In prison. Think about it. In prison. Well, if Bill O'Reilly had his way, they just would have been executed on the spot. That's what O'Reilly demanded for a physician here. Fox News Bill O'Reilly, remember? Tiller the killer, Tiller the killer, over and over and over again. So medical personnel, it's not just the right-wing sons of bitches in this country who, through their screaming and their right-wing points of view, winds up killing people. It's also in the Middle East. Way to go, Bill O'Reilly. Your comrades in the Middle East are now sentencing physicians to 15 years in prison. Well, not quite as bad as Bill O'Reilly's death sentence, but bad nonetheless. The state-run Bahrain news agency said the medics were jailed for forcefully occupying a hospital, spreading false news, inciting hatred of Bahrain's rulers, and calling for an overthrow of the regime. Really? How much you want to bet every single one of those charges is a goddamn lie? How much you want to bet? Huh? A complete fabrication. This is what the state does, especially when the state happens to be a monarchy. The law is what it says it is. Reality is what the king says it is. Just like in Bill O'Reilly's case. Reality is what he says it is. That's like the whole Fox News Murdoch terrorist broadcast operation. But I digress. This just reminds me of O'Reilly and the right wing in this country. It's the same damn thing. It's the same damn thing. The ruling against the doctors comes a day after a court, quote, a court my ass, upheld life sentences for 8 Shiite opposition activists convicted of plotting to overthrow the Sunni-led government in Bahrain. You know, it's a monarchy or a kingdom, but they do have a phony ass little parliament that operates at the will of the king. So a court, that's the Sunni led minority government. Now, a lot of the unrest in the so-called Arab Spring occurred because you have Sunni minorities ruling countries with Shia majorities. Saudi Arabia is another example. 13 other activists received sentences ranging from 2 years to 15 years on similar charges of sedition. Sedition. Officials in Bahrain say the sentences can be appealed. let's see how that goes. Of course, Amnesty International has condemned the sentences. A spokesman said, quote, these trials are grossly unfair. Some of the defendants in this trial and other trials have been tortured, and they were forced into making confessions, and so many people were detained without judicial arrest warrants. And it's a military court. Civilians should not be tried before a military court, end quote. Well, yeah, we can all agree on that, except here in the United States, we do essentially the same thing, but in certain instances. But here's the thing. Bahrain and the United States signed a defense cooperation agreement in October 1991, which grants U.S. forces access to facilities in that country and ensuring the right to preposition material for future crises in the Middle East. And Bahrain is also the headquarters of U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet. The U.S. designated Bahrain a major non-NATO ally in October 2001. So our major non-NATO ally, where we have the headquarters of the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, where we have close, loving, personal, warm, kissy-face relationships, I wonder what Hillary Clinton's State Department is going to do now. 15 years in prison for treating wounded demonstrators. Let me see. Oh, I know what they'll do. The State Department, the United States State Department, will issue a very strongly worded statement that says, we do not agree with this action. We hope that the rulers of Bahrain will reconsider, and then it will be deep-sixed and forgotten about.
said angry, let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
The hour. I am personally, just on a personal level, I'm very excited at the news that the protests, the so-called Occupy Wall Street protests, are spreading around the country. Boston, Chicago, Charlotte, Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, Albany. Keep it lit. And, of course, Thursday this week in Washington begins the occupation and nonviolent demonstrations by, I hope, thousands and thousands of people who will show up in D.C. I hope it turns out that way. I will be there. I hope you will be there. This program will be hosted by Brad Friedman Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now, the other issue that I do want to touch on is the Trans-Canada pipeline. The, what is it, Keystone XL pipeline? The one that is going to bring this poison out of the tar sands area of Canada across several states and a major Midwestern underground aquifer. And then into Texas. And I was kind of intrigued by the way the New York Times is reporting the story. Just reading several paragraphs, I saw what I consider to be either an example of poor research on the part of Elizabeth Rosenthal, who wrote this article. It's either poor research or it's just lies. I don't know how to consider it, but... What has popped us into the news again, now that all the arrests, at least up to this point, in front of the White House, have ended, there's nothing there in terms of, let's go see whose head's getting busted. There's nothing there to that degree. 1,200, 1,300 people were arrested. But that was then. That was starting back in August and September. That was then. This is now. So media are not too interested in the story. There are no pictures. And as far as print medium is concerned, okay, they're going to give it some coverage. But only if something scandalous happens. Something scandalous has happened. A bunch of emails that were obtained through a Freedom of Information Act back in January for documents relating to, by Friends of the Earth, asked for this, relating to communications between the State Department and a lobbyist for TransCanada, for Keystone XL. Those emails were finally released after a judge ordered them and demanded to know why the State Department had not fulfilled its Freedom of Information Act obligations. So emails were released and more are coming. And what this first batch reveals is a pretty cozy relationship between, first of all, a senior State Department official at the United States Embassy in Ottawa with Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's office in the United States. And also lobbyist Paul Elliott, who was a top official in Hillary Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign. He is now TransCanada's chief lobbyist in Washington, D.C. Now, you know, we've been talking about conflict or perceived conflict of interest because of Supreme Court Judge Uncle Clarence Thomas's old lady getting involved in issues that will show up before her husband for decision by the Supreme Court. And nobody seems to care about that too much, not the American public. Now, an inquiry has been asked for by concerned groups, an inquiry into illegal activity by Supreme Court Justice Uncle Clarence Thomas. This is in that same sphere, what happened between lobbyist Paul Elliott, a top former official in Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, and the fact that he's now TransCanada's chief Washington, D.C. lobbyist, and it's Hillary Clinton's office that has to ultimately sign off on this deal. So what do you think? Does it stink a little bit? We'll examine the stench when we come back after the break. Stay with us.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, where we are here, and I like the way the New York Times reports it. I'll get to the mistakes in, I guess I can call them that, in the reporter's reportage here. But the Obama administration is about to decide whether or not to go ahead and give the final okay to this pipeline that will take this really vile crude oil from Canada's oil sands to the United States Gulf Coast. And what has happened is that there were emails released today that show a warm, I love the way the Times puts it, a warm and collaborative relationship between lobbyists for the company building this pipeline and officials in the State Department, the agency that has the final say over the pipeline. Now, this should not come as a surprise. I mean, this business as usual. You think this stuff stopped with Bush? Do you think it started with Bush? Please, come on. Environmental groups said the emails were disturbing and represented evidence of complicity between TransCanada and American officials who have been given the job of evaluating the pipeline's environmental impact. Now, you know, so far there's not going to be any impact according to what's been released. A State Department spokeswoman, first of all, disputed that the email showed a pro-pipeline bias. She said, I love this. This is what she said, quote, "We are committed to a fair, transparent, and thorough process." She said that in an email Sunday to the Times. And she went on, quote, "Throughout the process, we have been in communication with industry as well as environmental groups, both in the United States and Canada," end quote. And then she noted that the State Department had conducted hearings. Right. In communities along the route of the proposed pipeline. Yeah. And those hearings, while I guess officially conducted by the State Department, the U.S. State Department contracted with third-party contractors to handle those hearings. And the company that they contracted to hire the hearings is associated with TransCanada. So, do you see what I mean? You get this. You're way ahead of me. You understand this. The illusion is being presented And this is part of the Occupy, the whole goddamn country that's going on right now. It's spreading. This is why, people are going to be in Washington, D.C. starting this Thursday. This is what it is. This is what it's all about. This relationship between corporations, in this case, TransCanada, a Canadian corporation. It doesn't make any difference where corporations are based. What is General Electric? Is that an American corporation? What is ExxonMobil? Is that American corporation? If these are American corporations, why don't they pay American taxes? You see, so the fact that TransCanada is a Canadian corporation means nothing, absolutely nothing. The relationship between the capitalists and the governing cliques in each one of these countries, it doesn't make any difference what the country is either. Canada, United States, England, Germany, Jordan, Israel, it doesn't make any difference. Not a bit of difference. The collaboration against the people, by these ruling cliques, the capitalists, and these phony-ass governments. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and TransCanada are making a decision. It doesn't make any difference what the hearings reveal. It doesn't make any difference how many people in the United States along this route say, no, we don't want this. It doesn't matter. So when the State Department spokeswoman says, we have been in communication with industry and we have conducted hearings in communities along the route, it means nothing. It's gibberish. But you and I are supposed to go, oh, okay, well, they've held hearings, so I guess if anybody wants to object. That's like here in Georgia or wherever you live. In various counties or the Public Service Commission, they will hold a hearing. I love the hearings here in Georgia. They will hold a hearing. Now, this state is being eaten alive by predatory Republicans. Not that it really matters. It really doesn't. Because the only way this is going to be turned around is for millions of people to take to the streets. So maybe that's happening. But as long as we're playing this dumbass game that says, oh, yeah, well, you've got democracy there in Georgia. Yes, you do. You got a parliament. That would be your House and your Senate, and you have a governor. That's just so much gibberish. Public Service Committee hearings here in Georgia, and probably in your state, are a joke, a farce. Southern Company wants to build more nuclear reactors in Georgia. And, of course, Obama's behind this. You know, yeah, let's build some more. Goddamn right. So what does Southern Company do? Southern Company, that has been identified as one of the major polluters in the United States. They don't care. They don't give a goddamn. Why should they care? It's greed. It's money. It's profit. They don't care. What do you want? Your lights to go out, Mike? No. What I would like would be electric co-ops, kind of like we had a long time ago, where power is generated. Only this time the power will be and owned by the people, by the way. Only this time the power will be generated with non-polluting methods, and they are available, and they're there. I don't care what these sons of bitches say. It can never be done. Of course it can be done. But we don't have that situation. We have a profit-motivated energy companies, and what they want is socialism when they're building the plant, the nuclear plant, and socialism when they have to take the plant down. But while the plant is operating, they want pure capitalism. Now, the socialism that pops up at these PSC hearings here in Georgia, maybe six or seven people will show up, and usually four of them are pro-environment activists. And of course, the state of Georgia looks at them with, oh, here are these people again from, oh, what is it? Gain Georgians Against Nuclear Energy. Are they still around? Oh, my God. Weren't they put together in the set? Oh, let's listen to. Hello, boys. Hello, girls. Gee, you folks must be in your 70s by now. Oh, it was your parents that came in here back in the 70s. Oh, I see. Well, you still haven't learned how to take a shower or press your jeans or put on a coat and tie, have you? What's your bitch. Oh, okay. We'll note it in the record. Goodbye. Go away. And then they go ahead and approve it anyway. It doesn't make any difference. So multiply that out by 50, of course. I'm assuming that most states run their PSCs the same way. There may be one or two exceptions. and then magnify and take it up to the State Department where it concerns the XL, Keystone XL Trans-Canada, Trans-US pipeline coming from this filthy sump hole of poisonous energy in Canada, Alberta, Canada, all the way down to the Gulf Coast. Now, the lies in the Times article, here we go. Wendy Nussmacher, a State Department spokeswoman, according to the Times, disputed that the emails showed a pro-pipeline basis. Quote, "We are committed to a fair, transparent, and thorough process." She added, as I said a second ago, "Throughout the process, we have been in communication with industry as well as environmental groups, both the United States and Canada," end quote. Now, according to the Times, she noted that the State Department, this is a quote from the Times, she noted that the State Department had conducted hearings in communities along the route of the proposed pipeline last week. Okay, handled, what the Times leaves out is who conducted those. The State Department did not conduct them. Now, the writer of this article of the Times, Elizabeth Rosenthal, then goes on to say, this is the Times speaking, "The State Department is tasked with permitting pipelines across national borders according to the national interest and is weighing the environmental impact of Keystone XL against the benefit in expanding the fuel supply for the United States." This is not about a fuel supply for the United States. It's already been made clear that are the five companies that are waiting for this garbage to be shipped across the United States. Four of them are involved in exports, exports only. Three of them are foreign countries. And the fifth one, an American company, is also involved in export. The oil is going to a tax-free international zone, whatever it's called. This is not for use in the United States. And then the writer of the Times goes on with the second one. "While the pipeline would help ensure the United States a stable fuel supply from a friendly neighbor," not true! That's not what's going on. But you see how this is presented in the newspaper of record. A stable fuel supply for the United States. The State Department, from a friendly neighbor. Friendly neighbor. Oh, well, thank you. Oh, yeah, Canada's a friendly neighbor. But isn't Canada already the number one importer of oil in the United States? Is it Canada? I think it is. And people in this country still don't get why Occupy Wall Street is spreading. And they don't understand that these news media freaks keep saying, "Well, we keep going down there interviewing them, and they can't tell us yet what their objective is." You ignorant, ignorant media types. Before the hour, so this relationship that is just never ending between the capitalists who are seriously trying to end life on Earth as we know it, primarily the energy companies, the non-renewable sources of energy. The source of energy that only takes punching more holes in the surface of the earth, more pollution, more destruction, and then as this crap is burned, well, you know what I'm talking about. The collusion between those people, since we're talking about that particular industry where it concerns the Keystone XL pipeline, and government officials, and it doesn't make any difference if the government is parliamentary, or a democratic republic, or a kingdom, or an emirate, or a dictatorship, or whatever the hell it is in China, it doesn't make any difference. The capitalists will deal with any of them. They prefer the ones that are less messy. Those would be the ones that are not as democratic. But the collusion that goes on is the collusion that is destroying everything. And it's the collusion that either we stop or we all die because of that collusion. I mean, it's a pretty clear choice. You know, this is not 1950. This is not the pictures of American exceptionalism with all the smokestacks dumping poison into the air. No, this is not 1960 at all. The event that is occurring starting Thursday, October 6th in Washington, D.C. is an outgrowth of, or a part and parcel of, or comrades to. It's all one movement of what's going on in D.C., among other places. And the press release from October2011.org simply says, impoverished, jobless, and those without health care converge on Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. beginning Thursday, October 6th. Jobless? Well, if we could get all the jobless there, that would be, I don't know, maybe 20 million people. The October 2011 movement is very clear in what it's about, is placing human needs before corporate greed. And as the release says, the movement has been joined by thousands of people and endorsed by more than 150 organizations, including those most affected by the current crisis. Reverend Bruce Wright of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign says, quote, we believe that the war on the poor must end here and abroad, that all foreclosures must stop, that housing, health care, adequate food, and fair wage are universal human rights, end quote. Vanessa Beck of Healthcare Now concurs. She says, quote, our safety net is at risk of being gouged, further threatening the health and well-being of our nation's most vulnerable. At a time when 1 in 6 live in poverty and 50 million Americans are uninsured, cuts to Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare will increase poverty, illness, and death. There is no better time to implement improved Medicare for all. It saves lives, keeps people healthy, redirects money away from the corporations into health care. Now, just keep in mind, a few days ago, not that long ago, as the Occupy Wall Street protesters marched down the street, media around the country were laughing and hooting and giggling and being snotty and patronizing and condescending in the little bit of coverage that they were providing. And then there's that picture. Remember the picture? Made its way all over the place. Wall Street executives laughing and drinking champagne as they looked out a window on a balcony over this. Now, a lot of people said, no, that was people celebrating a wedding. Oh, in a Wall Street office building. Okay. It doesn't make any difference. There they were, laughing, giggling, mocking people who were in the street, putting themselves out there to protest what's going on. Mockery. A clear indication of the callousness and the sense of being immune to the suffering that these sons of bitches have caused. And they don't even pretend to hide it anymore. Nobody, you know, the upper 1%. So to hell with them. The 99%, the people who, and when you talk about poor people, remember, we're not just talking about somebody that you see standing at the top of an exit ramp on the expressway anymore. No. That person may be homeless. That person may be jobless. That person may be running a scam. But that's not who we're talking about. What we're talking about now is 1 in 6 Americans who has fallen below the poverty line. 1 in 6? What? 15% of us? 49, 50 million people? That's astonishing. And children, what's the stat now? 1 in 3 children who are living in poverty? Well, you know, I've been asking for years, how much longer? How much longer? Maybe we've hit the point where it's time to tax the rich and the corporations. It's time to end the wars and bring the troops home. Cutting military spending. It's time to protect the social safety net, strengthen Social Security, improve Medicare for everybody. Maybe it's time to end corporate welfare for oil companies and other big interests. Maybe it's time for a transition to a clean energy economy. Maybe it's a time to protect workers' rights, including collective bargaining, creating jobs, and raising wages. Maybe it's time to get money out of politics. Maybe it's time for all of this. Maybe it's time to realize that we've had enough. We've had enough. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.